and Production Nuit d'Afrique present Women of the World Raise Their Voices, 5 special concert evenings from February 1st to March 8th. Don't miss the grand premiere. Lidl's Cameroonian Slam, Brazilian songwriter Bia Pereira, Lorraine Classen's 40-year career anniversary, The Roots Daughters Sound System, and Cora Virtuoso, Sona Jobarte. Discover the full program on festivalnuitdafrique.com. This is a CKUT color presentation.
From Turtle Island to Palestine, occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine! You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
Welcome everyone, you are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In the United States, the European Union, countries around the world are warning Israel against a ground invasion of Rafah in southern Gaza, where over 1 million Palestinians have sought refuge from the rest of Gaza. One top EU official said it could lead to a, quote, unspeakable humanitarian catastrophe. Authorities in Egypt have threatened to suspend a key peace treaty with Israel if Rafah is invaded. Hamas has also warned an Israeli invasion of Rafah will torpedo ongoing truce talks. For more, we're joined by Palestinian human rights attorney Noura Erekat and an associate professor at Rutgers University, author of the book Justice for Some, Law and the Question of Palestine. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Noura. If you can start off by responding to this threat over the weekend, that plans are being readied to invade—for Israel to invade Rafah, and the world, countries around the world, warning Israel not to do this. Apparently, President Biden doing that in a phone call with Netanyahu as well. Your response and what this would mean?
Good morning, Amy. It might be a bit refreshing to hear these warnings sound off from across the world in various capitals, but they are completely and wholly inadequate, given that we know that this is a plausible genocide, given that we know what Israel has said, despite multiple warnings. It created a ground invasion on October 27th. It has destroyed all of the hospitals. It has blown up all of the universities. It has created a situation of starvation, of a lack of even water. There is a humanitarian crisis that, even without another bomb falling, will lead to sure deaths of thousands of Palestinians. These capitals, these states, have an arsenal of diplomatic options available to them to stop a genocide. First and foremost is a UN Security Council resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire. Short of that is the cutting of weapons transfers, as has the Netherlands High Court demanded this morning, of stopping the transfer of F-35 jet parts to Israel. Belgium has stopped weapons transfers. Japan has cut military contracts. Short of that, these states can cut diplomatic ties. What is it? What is it to the population of Rafah now basically bracing themselves for more massacre, for warnings to a state that is responsible under international law and accountable? And if it is not responsible or accountable, it is either a complete rogue state that must be isolated by everybody, or it means that all these other countries are complicit and basically covering responsibility for themselves by issuing empty warnings.
I wanted to go to that issue of the Netherlands court ordering the Dutch government to stop exporting. These are U.S.-made F-35 jet parts being stored in the Netherlands to Israel. In the ruling, one of the judges wrote, quote, it is undeniable that there's a clear risk that the exported F-35 parts are used in serious violations of international humanitarian law. In November, Oxfam and Amnesty International sued the Dutch government, saying the arms transfers violate Netherlands' obligations under international law to prevent war crimes. Are you seeing this escalating around the world and other countries doing the same? Certainly, Germany gives even more weapons, and, of course, the United States the most.
I am seeing a surge. We have seen for the past five months, the only thing that has kept humanity together is the surge of civil society, which has waged lawsuits, which has risen in protest to do the work that states have failed to do. We see in the United States, the Center for Constitutional Rights bring a lawsuit in the Northern District of California, where the judge agreed that the ICJ was correct, that this is undeniable, a case of genocide, but he doesn't have the jurisdiction in order to stop the Biden administration. We saw the highest court in the world say the same thing, that this is plausibly genocide. We are seeing a series of judicial decisions that are coming to the same conclusion, but none of them can be enforced without political will, which is being impeded in the Security Council by the United States. Let's be clear. The ICJ on January 26, when it issued its provisional orders, said that that the international community has a duty and a responsibility according to its responsibility under the Genocide Convention not to perpetuate Israel's genocidal campaign. We see Israel directly violating those provisional orders. Nearly 2,000 Palestinians have been killed since January 26. We know for a fact that they have impeded the access to humanitarian aid, going so far as the Israeli Navy shooting, lobbing at UN humanitarian convoys from the Mediterranean Sea. We also see very clearly a continuing incitement to genocide, most recently in the convening of a far-right coalition of, I think, 11 ministers in government under the banner of settlement, bring security and victory. There is an explicit campaign to depopulate the Gaza Strip, to resettle it. No one is mincing words. Everybody is watching, covering themselves with these empty promises and warnings as Israel continues with its campaign. And this is a warning to the world. This is a warning to the world that we are watching, that this is very blatant and being exposed. In this situation that we have right now, in the worst case scenario, Israel will continue with its campaign. Egypt, which is trying to prevent this from happening, will likely create a buffer zone in the Sinai. If Israel is actually successful in pushing out the Palestinians, they will be stuck in that buffer zone, as have refugees from Syria been stuck at the buffer zone with Jordan and Iraq. That is the worst case scenario. Netanyahu telling the world that they're going to evacuate the Palestinians up north mean nothing when the north has been decimated. Rafah is the last standing city. They should not be taken. There's nowhere to go north. Israel must stop its genocidal campaign now. If it wants to offer refuge to Palestinians, it must offer refuge to Palestinians within what is historic Palestine, Palestine 1948, where they can actually be housed safely and where we know Israel does not want them and will return them to Gaza. There are many options at our disposal, and yet none of them are being accessed in this moment.
I want to ask you your thoughts on this latest development, the overnight airstrikes in Rafah, coming as Israeli forces carried out an operation to free two Israeli Argentine hostages who were found to be in good condition, Fernando Simon Marman, age 60, and Louis Haar, age 70. Earlier today, a relative of the two Israeli hostages freed in Rafah called for Israel to reach a deal now.
And we know about the discussions in Cairo or in Paris and others between the Hamas, between Israeli, with the mediators. Please be serious and strike a deal. The Israeli people needs the deal done. Not yesterday, not tomorrow, today. We want it done as soon as possible in order to give us some breathe. We must breathe a little bit.
Now, this is very interesting because this is a man whose beloved ones have been held since October 7th. But he's saying we cannot rest unless all the hostages are freed. And he's calling for a truce. But that is not what Netanyahu is calling for. Are you concerned that finding these hostages in an apartment building in Rafah will lead to more bombing and attacks in Rafah or to justify a full-scale assault?
Amy, Israel is not concerned. The Israeli government is not concerned with its hostages. If they were, they would have engaged in good faith negotiations. The diplomatic negotiations led to the relief of 136 hostages. That wasn't any military operations. After 5 months, they've only extracted 2 hostages. We know that the families want a truce. We know that the government is opposing a truce. We know that the concern is not the hostages. Israel shot to kill 2 of them, 2 of their own, who were raising white flags and speaking in Hebrew, giving us an idea that this is not a legitimate war. This is a genocidal campaign of extermination. Last night, the images that came out of Rafah are horrifying. There was a young girl, her legs cut off, hanging off of a wire by her shirt. This is disproportionate, excessive force that is meant to terrorize a population that is telling them, you have no life here. There is no future here. You must leave. That is the message that is being sent. We're seeing young children who are forced to be far older than their age. A young boy who escaped bombing, having his head and the blood cleaned off of it, telling the world, "No bachafish, I am not scared." How can he not be scared in this situation? How are all of us not terrified? We have taken away life for these children. We are decimating their future, even if we do survive. Images of babies who are being removed from the rubble with only 2 limbs, with no family members left. What is their future? And yet we're obscuring these atrocities. We're obscuring these genocidal campaigns with words of distraction. We're taking it and abstracting it to warfare and strategy, hostages and the negotiations, when the humanitarian situation speaks for itself, when tribunals have told us repeatedly, this is a genocide. It must be ended unequivocally. And that is incumbent upon us now before we see the last city in Gaza, the one that is normally home to 220,000 Palestinians, now housing 1.5 million Palestinians, 80% of the population, in tents and in dire humanitarian situation. We should be rushing in to treat them with medicine, with food, with water, with adequate care, rather than now preparing massacres for them, like the speaker before you, Dua, who has created a GoFundMe to save herself and her children. This is our responsibility. Last word on this. There is a concept in international law known as state responsibility, where a state must deal with the consequences of its actions. It cannot, Israel cannot say that it is now fighting a war of self-defense, which it doesn't have a right to under international law, against territory that it occupies. But if those actions are illegal, it must bear the consequences for them. Israel has imposed a siege against international law for 17 years, imposed a prolonged military occupation for 56 years, imposed an apartheid regime, which is a crime against humanity, that the international community has said is an apartheid regime, and still asking the world for an exception and blaming the Palestinians as the assailants, as it is committing a genocide, and now asking the world to let it commit genocide as a form of exception, that somehow it is like any other situation. And rather than meet that with the full force of diplomatic and international will to rebuff it, instead we're allowing Israel to create that exception, which will make none of the world safe. When other powerful countries and nuclear powers decide that they want to decimate inconvenient population, a native population, as in this case, in order to fulfill its national interests, it defies all of the logic of international legal institutions and international law, which are set up to regulate things like this in this very moment.
We just have 10 seconds, but you have a top aide to President Biden admitting that the Biden administration has made many missteps since the beginning of this. What do you think they could do, a single action that could make the greatest difference when it comes to what Israel does in Gaza, Noura Erekat?
They can abstain in the Security Council and allow an immediate ceasefire to take place. Biden can pick up the phone and tell Netanyahu to stop. They can actually stop the weapons transfers or even revoke this supplemental budget, which plans to resettle Palestinians in what will be an ethnic cleansing campaign and complicity in genocide. There are so many things to be done. These are empty words aimed at the 2024 elections as opposed to aimed at compliance with international law to meet our duty and responsibility under the Genocide Convention.
Noura Erekat, we want to thank you for being with us. Palestinian human rights attorney, associate professor at Rutgers University, author of Justice for Some, Law on the Question of Palestine.
After 5 months, they've only extracted two hostages. We know that the families want a truce. We know that the government is opposing a truce. We know that the concern is not the hostages.
While the far-right-wing Israeli government has committed another mass atrocity in their ongoing genocide against Palestinians, but don't worry, President Joe Biden's on the case. He is very, very unhappy with Benjamin Netanyahu. NBC News headline here, which is actually a great headline. Credit to NBC. They don't often frame these stories correctly, but this is exactly what the story is. Biden disparages Netanyahu in private, but hasn't significantly changed U.S. policy toward Israel and Gaza. Writing here, as the reported Palestinian death toll in the Gaza Strip reaches 28,000, the president continues to believe that unequivocally supporting Israel is the right policy. So often I've read, there have been leak after, I can't even count the amount of stories now that I've seen where Joe Biden is very angry privately with Netanyahu. And they all frame the story that way. Oh, he's very angry with Netanyahu. Without giving the context, which is important to give, I believe, in the headline, because most people just see the headlines, giving the context that he is not changing his policy towards Israel. The White House can leak all they want about Biden being angry with Netanyahu because they see how terrible his polling is right now because of Biden's position towards Israel, his unequivocal support of them. So they can keep trying to leak these stories about how angry he is, trying to raise Biden's poll numbers, but it doesn't mean anything. As long as you continue to support the far right wing Israeli government with everything that they want, what does your anger do? What does your anger mean? If anything, it's worse because it showcases that Biden is aware that Israel is doing the wrong thing, yet he is unwilling to use his power to do anything about it. And that power being this ongoing support, money, weapons, resources to the Israeli government. Biden can stop that, and he is not stopping any of it. So this anger means nothing. We go on to right here. Biden has said he is trying to get Israel to agree to a ceasefire, but Netanyahu is giving him hell and is impossible to deal with, said the people familiar with Biden's comments, who all asked not to be named. Giving him hell, impossible to deal with, yet you seem to be dealing with him fine when it comes to giving him everything he wants. Bizarre. His descriptions of his dealings with Netanyahu are peppered with contemptuous references to Netanyahu as this guy. Oh my, he called him this guy. And he also apparently called him an asshole. Oh my goodness. Watch out, Joe Biden. He's here to save you because he is very angry with this guy and this asshole. 2 weeks ago, officials told NBC News that the administration was discussing delaying or slowing U.S. weapons sales to Israel as leverage. Not even stopping. And first of all, discussions. So no serious attempt here to actually even delay or slow U.S. weapons. But these are discussions around delaying or slowing. Stopping isn't even on the table, isn't even part of the discussion that they're having. Yet he is very angry with Netanyahu. Give me a break. It's all bullshit. And this is the cherry on top. He and his aides continue to believe his approach of unequivocally supporting Israel is the right one. So how do you expect this far right-wing Israeli government to stop anything they are doing when your support of them is unequivocal and you believe that is the right approach? Here is what just happened. And this apparently began or really intensified while the Super Bowl was beginning, which doesn't seem like a mistake. But Common Dreams writing here, IDF rescues two hostages while killing dozens of Palestinians in Rafah. So, before I get to some more details here, this is one of the Palestinians who survived in the area. Why are they bombing us? They told us this was a safe zone. They told us to come here. So why are they bombing us? The Israeli government has been telling Palestinians to go to the Rafah border. And then they go and bomb them. And this isn't the first time that Israel has done this, telling Palestinians to escape to a certain place and then bombing that place. They have done this multiple times now. And this is what they bombed. Tents. They bombed tents. This is an Onion headline from 2014, by the way, just to give you an idea of how long this has been going on. It's been going on much longer than 2014. But to anyone, you know, new to this, since just October 7th, it's been going on for much longer. But this Onion headline is frighteningly accurate. Israel, Palestinians given ample time to evacuate to nearby bombing sites. This doesn't even really need to be an Onion headline. This could just be an NBC News headline, because this is exactly what has been going on. Common Dreams writing here, Israeli forces raided an apartment building in the besieged and overcrowded Gaza city of Rafah early Monday and rescued two hostages in an operation that killed dozens of Palestinians, including children. The freed hostages were later identified as 61-year-old Fernando Simon Marmon and 70-year-old Louis Har. A spokesperson for the Israeli Defense Forces said that both were in good medical condition. The Associated Press reported that heavy airstrikes that provided cover for the operation killed at least 67 Palestinians. The operation marked just the second time in more than 4 months of war that the IDF managed to rescue people taken captive during the Hamas-led attack on southern Israel in early October. Since then, Israel's military has killed more than 28,000 people in the Gaza Strip, including several Israeli hostages. This tells you a lot right here. The Israeli government knew they were bombing civilians, killed at least 67 Palestinians here, civilians, to get two hostages. This is going on while there was a deal on the table that I'll get to after this next clip I'm going to show you, where Israel could have had all the hostages back. And in fact, the families right now of the Israeli hostages are very angry with Netanyahu, because there have been multiple attempts to try to get all the hostages back through a ceasefire agreement that Netanyahu keeps shutting down, because his goal here is not to get the hostages. His goal is to completely destroy and control Gaza. So I want to show you a bit of a clip here from it's from Democracy Now! With a human rights attorney, Noura Erekat, discussing this recent campaign.
The Israeli government is not concerned with its hostages. If they were, they would have engaged in good faith negotiations. The diplomatic negotiations led to the relief of 136 hostages. That wasn't any military operations. After 5 months, they've only extracted two hostages. We know that the families want a truce. We know that the government is opposing a truce. We know that the concern is not the hostages.
So as mentioned there, the only real attempts from the Israeli government to get out hostages have been through these exchanges. And this one is from back in November, the second exchange. Since then, there has been no real attempts to get out the hostages, which is why the families, the Israeli families are so frustrated with Netanyahu. And then you have, as I mentioned earlier, attempted deals like this, Netanyahu rejecting this Gaza ceasefire deal that would have released all of the hostages. All of them, in exchange for more Palestinian prisoners. So this is what they were doing before. This would have been a larger version of that, and Netanyahu completely rejected it outright. Because again, this is not about the hostages for Netanyahu. This is about completely controlling the land. This is about ethnic cleansing. And he has said as much. So it's not like there's no attempts here to try and, you know, put words in his mouth. He has discussed that he wants to completely control Gaza. He wants to completely develop that land. That's his intent. So this is not about the hostages. That's why these bombing campaigns continue. And then, you know, thankfully, I'm just bringing this up because to show you that there are countries out there that recognize what is going on and are taking steps to try and not be a part of that. So court orders Netherlands to halt delivery of fighter jet parts to Israel. So the court noted a clear risk that the parts are being used in serious violations of international humanitarian law. This is one of the examples of what the ICJ report that concluded that it is likely that there is a genocide going on. This is one of the results of that, that you now have governments all around the world taking steps to ensure they are not a part of this potential genocidal campaign, which is a genocidal campaign. But again, you have to go back and watch my video on that ruling to understand why the wording is what it was. But these governments understand that they do not want to be a part of this. So you at least have, you know, the Netherlands here and others as well that I've seen attempt to take steps to remove themselves from the equation. And this is just also worth noting. Owen Jones retweeted this. Israel's official Twitter account has posted a picture of aid for Ukrainian refugees in Moldova in 2022 and pretended it's aid from Israel for Gaza. So this is the official Israeli account that posted this. This is not an image from Gaza. It is, in fact, refugees from Ukraine stock video. They actually went on to delete this tweet, as Ashine writes here, because they realized, not realized, because they were caught the reality that if you want to feel no hope for humanity, go check out the Israeli Twitter account. It is completely insane. But this is, you know, these kinds of steps are the bare minimum. This is what we should be seeing from the U.S. government, from the Canadian government, from the U.K. government, where they are actually cutting off support to this far right-wing Israeli government and their genocidal campaign. That is the only way to stop any of this.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh with Amy Goodman. A key Israeli intelligence document used by over a dozen countries, including the United States, to justify defunding UNRWA, the primary aid group for Palestinian refugees, contains no evidence to back up Israel's claims, according to several news reports. The allegations made in the Israeli document include accusations that several UNRWA employees participated in the Hamas attack on October 7th. Britain's Channel 4 obtained the document and found that it, quote, provides no evidence to support its explosive new claim that UNRWA staff were involved with terror attacks on Israel. The Financial Times, which also reviewed the materials, came to the same conclusion, as did Sky News. Now, the aid agency, which is critical to providing humanitarian support in Gaza, says it will run out of funds by March as a result of the funding cuts. The allegations made by Israel are just the latest in what journalist Jeremy Scahill calls, quote, Israel's information warfare campaign, which is aimed at, quote, flooding the public discourse with a stream of false, unsubstantiated, and unverifiable allegations. In his latest article published today in The Intercept, Scahill writes, quote, nearly every week, sometimes every day, the Israeli government and military have unloaded a fresh barrage of allegations intended to justify the ongoing slaughter. He adds, quote, the tactic is effective, particularly because the U.S. and other major allies have consistently laundered Israel's unverified allegations as evidence of the righteousness of the cause. Jeremy Scahill is a senior reporter and correspondent at The Intercept. His latest article is headlined, Netanyahu's War on Truth, Israel's Ruthless Propaganda Campaign to Dehumanize Palestinians. He joins us now from Germany. Jeremy, welcome back to Democracy Now! If you could just begin by laying out the case that you make in your latest piece.
Well, in the early morning hours of October 7th, members of Hamas from the Qassam Brigades, the Nukba, their elite special forces, as well as members of Palestinian Islamic Jihad, led a multi-pronged attack in Israel. Everyone is familiar with this. And the initial targets that they hit constituted almost the entirety of Israel's infrastructure in what Tel Aviv calls the Gaza envelope. And they were able to actually quite swiftly overpower the Gaza division, the main entity of the Israeli state responsible for enforcing the prison conditions of the people of Gaza, for carrying out drone strikes, for waging war, for conducting all manner of warfare against the people of Gaza. And then the militant Palestinian fighters made their way into a series of settlements in the area. And the intent was quite clear. They were trying to take hostages captive so that they could negotiate the release of their own prisoners. But what they did on that day was nothing short of shattering the paradigm, of sending a message that the big lie that is promoted by Israel, not just under Netanyahu, but certainly under Netanyahu, that Israelis could somehow live in peace a stone's throw away from what is effectively a concentration camp filled with 2.3 million people that are deprived anything vaguely resembling a human existence, that is tenable. And Israel was, by all accounts, caught off guard, despite the fact that its own intelligence analysts had been warning that it appeared that Hamas was preparing and training for something that was quite spectacular and not simply some small one-off attempts to fire rockets or even do a minor incursion into Israeli territory. And by all accounts, those were overlooked and dismissed. And what we saw happen then, as the Palestinian fighters made their way across these various Israeli communities and overtook the Gaza division and took many, many military personnel prisoner and brought them back to Gaza, was the Israeli government engage in sustained counteraction, including with Apache attack helicopters, with drones, when the military did finally arrive in some of these communities. And mind you, it was hours and hours before any official Israeli security forces were responding to some of these civilian areas. They engaged in widespread firefights at Kibbutz Be'eri. We know that eyewitnesses have said that Israeli forces shelled a house, likely killing at least a dozen Israelis who were being held captive by Palestinian fighters. And so the Israeli government then was reeling from the shock of having these crucial military bases overrun, communities being flooded with Palestinian fighters. And within hours of these attacks happening, the Netanyahu government began to craft a very deliberate propaganda campaign to sell the United States, other Western leaders, and the global public on a scorched earth war of annihilation against Gaza. And this campaign kicked into such high gear immediately. And what they did, what was central to this, is that the Israelis began showing President Biden, Secretary of State Blinken, the heads of state of NATO countries and other Western nations, images and videos that they then proceeded to tell an unverified story about what they depicted. And the characterization from Netanyahu and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant was that this was the greatest act of violence against Jewish people since the Holocaust, that the tactics that Hamas used included rape, beheading of babies, mutilation of bodies, torture of families, the bounding of children in groups, including in a nursery in one of the kibbutzes, and then engaging in mass execution of small children, setting children on fire. And President Biden, Secretary Blinken, and many Western leaders then started to repeat these claims. But what happened is that when Israeli Social Security Agency began to actually document the deaths on October 11th, they documented 1,139 deaths, 695 of them were civilians, and we started reviewing the public documentation of the deaths. It turns out that there was only one infant that was killed in all of the attacks combined on October 7th, a nine-month-old baby named Mila Cohen, and she was hit by a bullet during gunfire while she was in her mother's arm. There were also, I think there were 36 children under the age of 19 that died that day. 14 of them were actually killed in Hamas rocket attacks. So when journalists started actually looking then at the official death toll, and you can go, the Israelis have published the stories, the photos of many, many, many of the victims, you realize that these were all lies. It was a massive fraud that was perpetrated on the world, particularly this business about mass decapitation of babies. And Joe Biden, on numerous occasions, said that he saw actual photographic evidence of the beheading of babies and the bounding and burning alive with kerosene whole families. And what I discovered in my research was that these stories appear to have ended up in the heads of Biden and Blinken and others based on the totally fraudulent version of events on October 7th that was offered by private Orthodox rescue operations. The most famous of them is Zaka, telling stories about a pregnant woman who had a fetus cut out of her body, and then the fetus was decapitated in front of the woman and her two children. There's no evidence whatsoever to indicate that that happened. In fact, there's no documentation that any pregnant woman died on October 7th. There was one pregnant woman who was shot while in her car on the way to deliver her baby. She was a Bedouin woman, and the doctors were able to save her life. They tried to deliver the baby. The baby died some hours later, but that wasn't Hamas cutting a baby out of a stomach. And yet these lies were sold, and some of the most obscene things that Israel said that we now know are false were repeated by Anthony Blinken, the U.S. Secretary of State, in testimony in front of the Senate, by Joe Biden himself. And this has gone on and on and on. I've just given you a couple of the most graphic examples of this. But what's clear is that the Israeli government understood that they needed to sell this as like the worst crime against humanity in modern times in order to justify a long-planned siege of Gaza that Benjamin Netanyahu, he represents the most extreme and violent version of the Israeli state project. And it's very, very clear that they sold this fraud and the White House laundered it. And that's why we've seen, and I think the 27,000 people killed in Gaza is a conservative estimate. I think it's much greater than that, because there's an estimated 7,000 or 8,000 Palestinians missing, many of them in graves that are the rubble of their former homes. So this is one of the most epic frauds in modern history, reminiscent of the lies told to justify the invasion and occupation of Iraq.
Jeremy, I'm wondering if we can jump for a moment to the beginning of this segment, from October 7th to the UNRWA story, that something like what the Israeli government was alleging, 12, and then that number got larger, members of UNRWA, which has something like 13,000 workers in Gaza, were involved with the October 7th attack. Talk about, if you will, the way you do in your piece, take apart, as Channel 4 did, as a number of news organizations have, the evidence for this that has been used by now almost 20 countries to defund this essential organization that supports the hospitals and the schools of Gaza for over 2 million people.
Well, UNRWA is nothing short of the most important humanitarian organization operating in Gaza. In fact, it was explicitly established in 1949 during the Nakba, where 750,000 plus Palestinians were forced from their homes in an extermination annihilation campaign that then paved the way for the establishment of the State of Israel in the aftermath of World War II. And the mandate of UNRWA was to care for those Palestinians and ensure that their right of return to their homes and land was going to be protected. And so the Israeli government, certainly under Netanyahu, but under other heads of state as well, has always wanted UNRWA eliminated, because this represents a very serious problem for the Israeli agenda of eliminating Palestinian territory in its entirety. So just to give that context. But then the Israelis decide that immediately after the International Court of Justice rules in favor of South Africa and orders provisional measures that include the prevention of genocidal acts, The stopping of killing Palestinians that the court recognized as a protected group, and to allow with immediate effect the entry of aid sufficient to confront the humanitarian catastrophe caused by the Israeli war on Gaza. The Israelis then choose to open a new front and just blast the public and the ears of Western leaders with a propaganda campaign aimed at trying to get them to join the crusade to eliminate UNRWA. And Israel then prepared what it called an intelligence dossier, alleging that 12 employees of UNRWA, it has 13,000 or so employees in Gaza, 30,000 employees spread out across the Middle East where Palestinian displaced Palestinians reside. And the response from the Biden administration was to immediately announce it was suspending all funding to UNRWA. And Secretary of State Antony Blinken admitted publicly that the United States had not even done its own review or investigation of these assertions that 12 members of a 30,000-member organization had some link to the October 7th attacks. And then what happened, and this is so reminiscent of Judy Miller, the New York Times, the Mushroom Cloud, Dick Cheney, build-up to the war in Iraq. They go to the Wall Street Journal, and the Israelis provide the Wall Street Journal with what the journal then advertises as a dossier, an intelligence dossier. And they go further than the 12. They say that a full 10% of UNRWA's Gaza staff, 1,200 employees, are connected to Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And they say this is not just a few bad apples. Well, this laundering of Israeli propaganda in the form of an article for a major American newspaper was the lead author of that article was Carrie Keller Lynn. She's a new contributor to the Wall Street Journal. I started digging into who is this person because she didn't have a full bio on the Wall Street Journal website. Well, it turns out that she is a veteran of the Israeli Defense Forces. She is what was a militant opponent of the boycott, divest, sanctions movement when she was at university in the United States. And she, her close friend, who she did a joint interview with for an organization that takes American grad students to Israel, she credits her with, during the 2009 Gaza war, creating the social media strategy for the Israeli Defense Forces. This is the reporter that was the lead journalist writing this UNRWA story for the Wall Street Journal. And once we started to draw attention to that and put photos of her in her IDF uniform and talking about her ties to someone she said helped create the social media strategy for the IDF during a previous war in Gaza, then these organizations she was affiliated with scrubbed all of these articles and photos from the internet. The journalist locked her Twitter account. But this was very, very clearly a sophisticated propaganda campaign where they knew which journalists to go to, they knew which governments would buy into it, and what they got is the Biden administration now being actively complicit in violating the orders of the International Court of Justice, which has Israel under watch for potential plausible genocidal actions in Gaza.
Finally, Jeremy, do you think on the October 7th investigation that it wasn't simply enough for Israel to say over 1,000 Israelis and other people, majority of them civilian, were killed in the Hamas attack? Was not enough of justification to go into Israel and then multiply that over 27 times to more than 27,000 dead today.
The Israelis, particularly the civilians who were killed that day, deserve the truth about what happened. The Israeli government responded with very heavy firepower. There's indications that the Hannibal Directive may have been invoked, which says that it's better to injure and possibly even kill Israelis than let them be taken hostage. They also made sweeping allegations about sexual violence being systematically committed by Hamas, that they have provided no proof that such a systematic campaign took place. The victims in Israel deserve the truth, and the 30,000 plus Palestinians who have been murdered with American bombs, whose deaths have been justified by the killing of those Israelis, possibly including by their own government, they also deserve the truth.
Jeremy, I'm afraid, I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave it there. Jeremy Scahill, senior reporter and correspondent at The Intercept.
Oh, God, this story is so annoying. that I don't even know what to title this video. Politicians once again fall for right-wing propaganda. I'll figure it out. But this is essentially what happened. And I'll get to all the details here. There was a protest in downtown Toronto that started at one consulate, I believe the Israeli consulate, walked its way to the U.S. Embassy. And that turned into something that it was never because of the propaganda that was spewed about this protest that politicians of every single political identity fell for. It all starts with examples like this. So this is, I guess, one of many videos that were going around. Protesters target Mount Sinai Hospital in Toronto, Canada. In case you don't know, and I wouldn't blame you for not knowing because apparently hospitals have ethnicities now. That's news to me. But Mount Sinai has it was started by a Jewish community. Four immigrant women from Toronto's Jewish community started this hospital. And yeah, so this apparently, you know where we're going with this, right? Toronto Sun, Toronto's far right-wing newspaper. Pro-Hamas supporters surrounding Jewish hospital. A hate crime. Yes, the far right-wing paper, Toronto Sun, very concerned with hate crimes. But it gets even better. Terrorist supporters. You have to laugh at how stupid this is. Terrorist supporters harass hospital patients in Toronto. Yes, oh, they went to harass... How dare you go to the hospital? Just going off of this idea, terrorist supporters, the ones protesting for a ceasefire, terrorist supporters. This is not even up to date, by the way. This is CNN World's account of death toll in Israeli-Palestinian conflict over the last 15 years. Last time this was updated was early January, January 3rd. The orange should actually now be over 28,000. But just taking a look here, the orange are Palestinians. The purple is Israelis. This is 15 years of data. This kind of gives you an idea of the power imbalance and what's actually been going on. Yet, only one side has terrorists. 28,000 civilians killed in Gaza. And that's just since October 7th. We're not even accounting all the rest before this year or before last year. And then, of course, half of them are children, because in Gaza, it has one of the youngest populations in the world because of a lack of food, lack of medicine. Again, Israel controls the borders, controls the water, controls the air. They control what gets in, what gets out. It's a very tough life for people in the, living in Gaza. But no, what's important here? What's really important here? Trudeau here tweeting out, the demonstration at Mount Sinai Hospital yesterday was reprehensible. Hospitals are places for treatment and care, not protests and intimidation. I strongly condemn this display of anti-Semitism. In Toronto and across Canada, we stand with Jewish communities against this hate. But I'm going to debunk this entire bullshit very clearly in a bit here. I just want to show you the examples of the morons that fell for this. Jagmeet Singh, NDP leader Jagmeet Singh, who should not have fallen for this, but he did. Yesterday, the Mount Sinai Hospital was targeted because of its ties to the Jewish community in Toronto. Absolutely factually incorrect. This is not okay. Hospitals are a place for healing, not a target for protests. Doug Ford on Mount Sinai, have some decency. How dare you stand up against a far right-wing government and Canada and the U.S.'s support of that government as they bomb 28,000 civilians? How dare you have some decency? Mayor Olivia Chow, who is better than the previous mayor, but at least on this issue, not at all. Here's her statement. A hospital is a sanctuary, a place of healing for all. My family has a long history with Mount Sinai. My father passed there. Both my late husband and I had cancer treatments there. Yesterday's actions at Mount Sinai Hospital, a hospital founded by Toronto's Jewish community, were unacceptable. Targeting Jewish institutions is anti-Semitic and hate has no place in our city. And then we got Pierre Polyev, who retweeted another conservative MP saying, an embassy? Nope. A consulate? Nope. That they went to both. This is also, like, this is just blatantly telling people, I do not know anything about this story. I'm going to pretend they did not go and protest an embassy or consulate when they did that exact thing. But again, I'll get to all the facts in a second. A government office note, the mob chose patients, their families, nurses, doctors, and all those helping to save lives inside of a hospital. They chose Jews because it's Mount Sinai Hospital. So gross. All right, I'm going to show you how ridiculous all of this outrage is. This is the route. This is roughly the path of the protest last night. Started at 5:30 p.m. Starts at the Israeli consulate at Bloor Young and goes down to Simcoe to the U.S. consulate. Two governments funding the massacre in Gaza. The red pin is Mount Sinai Hospital. It's on the way, not a stop. This is the route between the two. And if you go to Google Maps and just type in both, the Israeli consulate, the U.S. consulate, and this is the direction it tells you to go in. And guess what? You pass by Mount Sinai Hospital on the way. This is the default directions between the two consulates. But, oh, but David, there was a guy. Didn't you see the guy climbing? There's a guy climbing. Climbing the hospital. He was targeting the hospital, David. He was targeting the hospital. This guy apparently climbs on everything. So this guy filmed the march. Here's the same guy climbing the Eaton Center and a pole at Charles Street. He climbed every scaffolding and building he could. Sinai was not treated any differently. This din of absurdity that's framing the scaling as anti-Semitic is both churlish and dangerous. This guy climbs everything. Climbing the mall, climbing a pole. Janella Massa here, who used to work at CBC. I hope she still does. One of the few bright lights on that network. But now it just says broadcast journalist, so I'm not sure. But writing here, Spider-Man for Palestine is on Instagram with about a dozen photos of him climbing stuff at rallies dating back to December. Politicians condemning a protest passing a hospital while saying nothing about hospitals being bombed is maddening. This is exactly what has gotten me to start punching the punching bag. I took a break from working out. I was reading all the outrage, the faux outrage of this garbage, and I got a punch. This punching bag, because I gotta take out this just frustration that I have reading all this absolute trash. Here is this guy. Look, he climbs everything. So maybe the worst you could say is this guy is just looking for opportunities to climb things. Like, I don't know, but here he's climbing shit. This has nothing to do with targeting a hospital, and anyone saying so is either stupid or lying to you. Here is a comment from Toronto for Palestine. This is one of the groups that were organized this protest. Quote, meanwhile, Israel's complete decimation of Gaza's healthcare system, its disabling of every hospital within the strip, its deliberate targeting of civilians within hospital grounds, and its killing of more than 340 healthcare workers don't warrant even the slightest expression of protest or condemnation from them. Speaking of the politicians, the double standards are as blatant as they are odious, and their comments don't warrant any serious engagement. They will say whatever they must to preserve their political careers. Yeah, so what I said earlier about these politicians being stupid, I was being, you know, facetious. They're not stupid. They very likely understood what actually happened, because that in every other case, they're going to be well-informed. They're going to be told ahead of time, or they're going to be told what happened. They're going to be given all the details to ensure they don't make any mistakes. But when it comes to something like this, they are simply trying to speak to a certain audience, and they do not care. It is amazing to me how often politicians that are not a part of a conservative party fall into far right-wing propaganda, or I should say answer to right-wing propaganda. They're so afraid of offending the right, but when it comes to acknowledging actual reality, acknowledging an actual genocide going on that this government is supporting, it's complete silence. Or it's on a case-by-case basis, as the Beaverton, this great headline here. Trudeau, protests at hospitals are reprehensible. Bombings to be judged on a case-by-case basis. So in case you don't know, Beaverton, if you are not Canadian, Beaverton is the essentially the Onion of Canada. They rarely miss. Great headline here. And this is what they're talking about. I mean, this has been ongoing. Israeli drones attack hospital in southern Gaza. This is from January 19th. And 3 months ago here, Gaza's largest hospital being bombarded, says the World Health Organization. This is from Human Rights Watch. Gaza, unlawful Israeli hospital strikes worsen health crisis. And this is from an hour ago. Israel orders evacuation of largest hospital in southern Gaza. And this has been a hospital where doctors and health officials say a number of people there have been killed by Israeli sniper fire. On this, where actual civilians, their lives are being taken. Absolute silence for most politicians. But a protest, protesting for a ceasefire, wanting to see peace, wanting to see the end of civilian death, they are completely smeared by far right-wing propaganda. And it's one thing to be smeared, you know, it's one thing for the Toronto Sun, which you know, it's the Toronto Sun. You don't expect much. It's another for politicians of every political party to fall into this trash. And one last thing here. I'm recording this after recording my video because I just discovered this article and it is fantastic. It gives you a minute-by-minute breakdown of exactly what happened during this protest. This was written by David Gray Donald in The Grind. Fantastic resource here. Gives you the full context, a full objective analysis of exactly what occurred, as well as the aftermath and the reactions and, you know, how some things could have been taken out of context and misconstrued in the way that they were. This is a really good piece. And in fact, after discovering this article, I'm going to follow The Grind more often, as I was not aware of them. But if you want more context to the situation, check out this article.
That's it for us for today. You are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Until next time, I wish you a free, free Palestine. Thank you.
What's going on, y'all? It's your girl, Miss Ben, and it's Black History Month, so you know we'll be kicking it every Tuesday right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Every Tuesday from 3 to 5, I bring to you Heal, Black Girl Heal, where we discuss some in-depth conversations with those that got some things going on within the Black community. And let's not forget about all of the plentiful activities that you need to keep up to date with. So do not forget, each and every Tuesday for the month of February, right here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Supposed to say, take a second, yeah, why don't you, babe?